Welcome to Caffeine, Crime and Canines, a podcast brought to you by two girls who love their dogs, love coffee, but most importantly, love true crime.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Good.
What are you doing?
Oh, not much, just did all my groceries and jobs this morning and then that's that.
That's nice and productive.
I know. What about you? What have you been up to?
I went and got my nails done and I'm wrapped with them for my so long. I think I was there for like an hour and a half.
Oh, Jesus.
Close to 2 hours and I was in a 1 hour spot, like car spot. So I was like, oh my gosh, going back to my car. I was like, please don't have a ticket, which I didn't. So taking that as a win.
Yes.
And now I am sipping coffee and eating freckles.
Oh, yeah.
They are so good. I got a pack for Christmas and now I'm not kidding you, I'm obsessed with them.
Yum.
So
do you know
good.
Actually yes. This morning I made honey joys. Do you remember them?
Yes. Oh my goodness. I haven't had them for ages.
Yeah, I made some this morning and they're so good.
They're so easy to make, aren't they? You just like shove everything together and pop them in those little party things.
Yeah.
So good. That.
What else this week? I've been working like crazy. Today's my only day off till next Saturday or next Friday. I'm not sure yet. But,
it is wild. And late nights as well, Lockie.
I know. It's killing me.
The last week though, yeah?
Yeah. So, tomorrow is normal and then the rest of the week is 7 till 7.
My goodness.
So. Yeah, it's the thing that annoys me is like I don't need to be there for 12 hours. They just like to have me there in case. And like yesterday, I knew we were done at about 5:30, and I said, I'm like, you know, you guys aren't gonna need me for the rest of the evening. Like I might just go, and they're like, oh no, just in case. So I had to stay till 7.
Oh.
It's like, ugh. Anyway. just name of the game, I suppose. And I get overtime, so it's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
but anyway.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. Just dying for sleeping.
Oh, I can imagine. That's why when I messaged you this morning, I'm like, I hope you're relaxing, but you were obviously already up.
I was already up.
Early.
Yeah, because I felt bad because, like, obviously my kid had Elsie all day yesterday and he had a late night on Friday, so he had to get up to her yesterday. So, like, I got up for today for him. I think next Saturday I should get a sleep in, I think. I'm just like already looking forward to it.
You're like counting down the days.
And I'm so lucky because Elsie, like normal wake up for her is like 8 o'clock. Occasionally she'll sleep later. So we'll see.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah. Before we get into this week's episode, we need to address something, and you know what I'm going to talk about. So, most people won't know, but this week we obviously posted that TikTok, like Instagram reel about Gypsy Rose Blanchard being released from prison, and on TikTok we got a bit of backlash, personal, almost, like quite personal, don't you think?
I think it's hilarious. Like the one on Insta was pretty savage as well. I feel like people are just, I actually cannot believe how obsessed people are. And people are, and it's getting, it's that they're, it's bizarre that they're triggered. So
yeah,
easily.
That's exactly right. But like for our listeners, some of the things people said to us was that we're jealous of her. that, what else do people say? That we're contradicting. Like how we say we're kind of sick of seeing her, yet we've done a podcast episode on her. Like we did this podcast episode on her like almost 3 years ago. Like it's not like we're like piggybacking off this whole hype. Like we did this ages ago and we're just updating. And then I'm just going to jump on
you. I thought it was funny because you – like I just laugh at the comments, but you were absolutely
– I was so mad. And, like, it's lucky that I didn't comment because I would have been a savage.
Can I tell you, because I did reply back sort of, like, explaining ourselves, and now I freaking wish I didn't. From now on, any mean comments, I'm just going to like them. Because if anything, that's just going to make them more mad that I liked their comment. You know what I mean? Like,
the Insta one was probably the worst, I reckon. Like, she was, like, calling us assholes and swearing at us in the comments. I mean, I did want to rebut these people, and I know they don't listen to the podcast. That's half the reason. But, like, we are not trying to get – like, people said that we're trying to get our 5 seconds of fame. We do a true crime podcast. This is what we talk about. We are not trying to get our 5 seconds of fame from her. Like, that is not what's happening. And, like, we are not jealous. Like, and I think what I want to convey is, like, we don't have a problem with her as a person. Like, she's clearly gone through something traumatic, and that's horrible. But I have a problem with, like, us as society as to why we are hyping this girl up and completely, like, harassing her online. Like, I just don't get it. Like, let the girl live. Leave her alone. Like...
And not only that, but the people, like one of the comments is like, you don't even know her. And I'm like, get a grip. You don't know her.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what are you talking about? That's why I was just like, oh, so funny.
The thing that makes me also, like, frustrated is, like, there would be thousands of other people sitting in prison that have had, you know, abusive childhoods that probably had to take a similar route to her. Do they get this type of treatment when they get out of prison? No. They
look at them in halfway houses.
Exactly. And they have to, they can't get a job. They lose their family. Like, I just, like, be consistent. Like, I don't, that's what pisses me off the most.
Well, someone actually said, they're like, if she was male, would she have this treatment coming out? And I honestly agree that she wouldn't. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
she would not. That's what I don't like about it either. So, yeah, anyway.
We'll just let that blow over. I'm sure next week people won't even be watching it, but.
Yeah. Hey, I do have a bit of an update on Amanda Knox. I don't know if you know about this, that she's heading back to court in Italy, Lockie.
Really?
Yes, because, so you know that she was she was convicted on slander of her old boss, that Patrick Lumumba guy. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Because she put him at the scene of the crime, right? So she was convicted for slander, but she's obviously taken that to the court and appealed it, and it's gone. Like, they're going to retry it. Really? And I haven't looked yet, and I haven't looked too much into it, right? But just from some of the stuff I've seen and from Real Crime Profile, they were just talking about how she's appealing it on the fact that she – I don't think she – like, she's saying that she was coerced by the police when she made these allegations, and that she wasn't offered, like, any legal representation or an interpreter when she said this, right? And after that – so they wrote down, like, do you know what I mean? Like, obviously what had happened and made her sign it. And I think in the same night, like, she just wasn't feeling right about it. She asked them for paper, and she wrote down – I'm quite sure in English, obviously – what – like, you know what I mean? Like, her own comments on the whole situation. And that sort of goes against what they had said. You know, like, what she signed, like, her original sort of confession. So that's why, like, now it's sort of heading back to court. So that will be really interesting to watch. Mm. And from my understanding, that Patrick guy does blame her for being arrested and thrown in prison for, like, those 2 weeks. Because she did say that maybe she had, like, some sort of memory of seeing him at the house. But in saying that, he was originally brought – she didn't throw his name out there. He was brought up to her by the police because – see, this is, like, going back, and I can't remember the exact details. But from memory – remember, she had sent him – so she was meant to work that night, and this is her boss, right? But it was obviously quiet, or he was closing up early, so he messaged her, like, don't bother about coming in. And in Italian, she replied, like, no worries, see you later. As in, you know how we just say see you later, and that could be mean whenever. But in, like, the – obviously, Italian investigators took that literally, and this is the night that Meredith died. So they took that message – literally, and thought that she actually saw him later, and do you know what I mean? He was in on the murder. It is crazy. So, yeah, that will be interesting to watch. But yeah, her appeal has been granted. So, yeah, wow. Space.
That's like a good comparison to Gypsy Rose. Like, Amanda Knox, who did nothing wrong, was completely slandered in the media. Gypsy, who, yes, had an abusive childhood, but she, you know, assisted with a murder. Held on a pedestal. Like, I don't get it.
It's crazy. Anyway, freaking crazy.
I honestly think we should stop talking about it because we're just going to get more hate.
I can, yeah, I know, and I can feel you already. Like, I can feel your fume. You know what I mean? But hey, I do have something I did want to ask you about. I don't know if you've seen these ads, right? But there's this ad on TV, and it's called like Mighty Munch, about like dogs that like chew their paws and stuff.
Oh, I already use it.
Do you?
Yeah, I've been using it for like 3 or 4 months with Olive, and she has it. It's like a powder. It's like a probiotic powder. And
yes.
Yeah, and our groomer actually told us about it. And we put it on her dinner every night. It's freaking expensive, by the way, but we put it on her dinner every night. And look, I think it's made a small improvement, but I wouldn't say it's like groundbreaking. Like, she's literally been at her paws today, like, for most of the day. But
interesting, because, you know, because Vic's been chewing at his paws, like, here and there. It's not, like, crazy, but I do feel like it's because, obviously, Olive's on prednisolone as well. I feel like it's a lot of the time it's before he's taken his prednisolone in the morning. So, obviously, that when he takes that tablet, it must, like, help with the swelling or the irritation or something, right? But I saw this ad on TV. I purchased it. I've been waiting almost 2 weeks now. I still have not received it. So, I was just going to tell you about, yeah, that I've ordered it and I'm waiting for it to come. But I'm so excited that you're using it as well. So,
yeah, and, like, we're not going to stop. Like I said, only a small improvement. I think it's better than, like, I've noticed a small difference. But Olive's on that much medication for her allergies that I feel like just all of these little bits and pieces put together is enough for her.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's been at her paws today, but she has like a 6-week injection for allergies. And it, like, I think she's due next week, and we always find that as it runs out, she gets itchier.
Yeah.
But yeah, you'll have to see if it helps for Vic. But my groomer said she groomed a dog, and I say groomed in the past tense because it was like, I don't know if it was an allergy, but it was like stress or something, and it like lost all of its hair. It was a Labrador. It was bald. And they put on this Mighty Munch and all her hair grew back.
Wow. Okay, yeah. That's amazing. I'm excited. I'm excited for it.
Yeah. So, yeah, you'll have to update us on how Vic goes.
Yeah, I totally will.
It's actually funny because, like I said, Olive had really itchy paws today. She was sitting, like, we walked into our room and she was sitting with her paws like, I don't know how to explain it, like in a C shape, like,
oh,
like with them pointing outwards, like she was trying to air them in or something. She must be so itchy, poor little thing.
Oh no.
Anyway.
Gosh.
But do you reckon we should get into this week's case?
Yes, Lockie. I can't wait to talk about this with you. So,
all right. Let's get into it.
Baltimore has always been a quintessentially Catholic city.
The priests were the authority. Whatever they told you to do, you did.
The city has its level of corruption. Sister Kathy exemplified this spirit of compassion and kindness.
I have never had a teacher like that before.
She was murdered our senior year, and it's always haunted many people in the community.
Our mission, we were driven to find out who hurt Sister Kathy.
People pop up from 45, 50 years ago who say, I have a story I'd like to tell you.
I believe Kathy Sesnick was killed because she was going to talk about what went on at Keough.
There's an on-the-record public story of what happened to Sister Kathy. And then there's the world beneath.
The police department and the state could provide protection for the priests.
There were other people brought in, local business owners, politicians that were part of this network.
I can testify that over 100 victims have been abused.
Time is getting short for us to be able to figure out what happened to Kathy.
My father said to my mother, you want to know why I drink? Because we killed a woman and we put her behind the shop.
He said, you see what happens when you say bad things about people?
This goes bigger and deeper than we can imagine. The story is not the nun's killing. The story is the cover-up of the nun's story.
All right. So today we are talking about the case of Catherine Sesnik, or Kathy Sesnik, or Sister Kathy. She's also known about. This case was covered in a Netflix documentary called The Keepers, which was released a few years ago. And that focuses on like kind of multiple elements of the case, I suppose, but we'll focus more on Sister Kathy. So Catherine Ann Sesnik was born on November the 17th, 1942. She was the eldest of four children, and her parents were Joseph and Ann Sesnik. She grew up around Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and her grandparents were like immigrants from, I think, I want to say like Slovakia, Czech Republic, or one of those Eastern European countries. So Kathy grew up in a pretty religious Catholic household. She went to Catholic school. She was May Queen, which is the Catholic version of like a prom queen. She was president of her senior class, and she also graduated as valedictorian. So she was very, very bright, very social. Everyone liked her. And by the age of 18, so she decided that she wanted to give her life to God and become a nun. Mm. So at the age of 18, she joined the School Sisters of Notre Dame in Baltimore. And this is like a convent where you learn to become a nun. Like, you take your oaths and do all the stuff you have to do.
It's really strict, isn't it? Like, even like, you know, which time you get up, you do chores,
Yeah. So Sister Kathy, when she had gone through all that training and all that stuff, she then went on to teach English and head up the drama department at Baltimore's Archbishop Keogh High School. So this was an all-girls private Roman Catholic high school. And this high school had like the church on campus, the convent on campus, like it was very religious. She started teaching at this school in 1965, and she was actually one of the youngest nuns at the school, and she lived in the convent on campus.
She was like a cool nun, probably because she was so much closer to the age of the students. They just gelled with her from all the interviews I've seen, that she was just loved, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of the students described her more like a big sister because she was so close to them in age, you know, and got along with them. So Sister Kathy has been described as beautiful, compassionate, and one of a kind. And like you mentioned, she really connected with all of her students. She really cared about them as people, wanted to help them, wanted to teach them, you know, all good reports of her. So while teaching at Keogh, Sister Kathy became friends with a priest. His name was Jerry Koob. And they became very close, and it's reported that they were actually talking about getting married. And that is a big deal because obviously as a nun and a priest, you give your life to God, you're celibate, and they say you're married to God, so they don't get married.
Yeah, and I think that one of the, like a massive point on this, especially that they do talk about in The Keepers, is that neither one of them had taken their final vows. So obviously when you are, you know, becoming a nun or becoming a priest, they don't want you to just like take your vows and then, do you know what I mean, like regret it further down the track. They do want you to sort of live a little bit and make that decision if it's right for you, if that makes sense. And I'm quite sure, like, he speaks in the documentary and he says, we did like love each other. And I said to her, like, I would not take my final vows. Like, I'd rather marry you and, do you know what I mean, have a life with you, have children with you. But although she loved him, she said that they were meant to follow through with their vows.
Mm, yeah.
So I just thought that was interesting.
So in 1969, Sister Kathy actually left Keogh High School. And what this meant was that she left the confines of the convent on campus. And for the first time in her life, she got an apartment, which she shared with another nun. This nun was Sister Helen Russell Phillips, and she went by Russell. And for Sister Russell and Sister Kathy to leave and live off campus, they had to get like special permission from the church. Like, they were still considered nuns, but they just weren't living in the convent and on campus. And what they were, I think the way that they kind of approached it to the church was that they were trying to branch out of Keogh and get insight into local you know, teens and adolescents to help them, you know, with their lives. But they were still part of the church. They were just doing like a different project, if that makes sense.
Like experiment sort of.
Yeah. So when Sister Kathy left Keogh, her and Sister Russell had gone on to teach at Western High School in Baltimore County, and this was like a public high school. And the students there didn't know she was a nun. So it's not like she wore a habit or anything like that. Like they didn't know, you know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they didn't know.
Wow.
So on November the 7th, 1969, Sister Kathy and Sister Russell went home. This was a Friday. So they went home after working at the high school for the day. And at around 7 p.m., Sister Kathy said she was heading out to run some errands. She drove to a bank to cash her paycheck, which is like $240 or something. She then headed to a local bakery to pick up some buns. And then she wanted to head to a jewelry store to get an engagement gift for her sister who had recently got engaged. So they were the errands she was planning to run that night. Sister Russell became worried when Kathy did not return home. And at around midnight, Russell called Jerry Coob, just say, hey, she hasn't come home. So Jerry was actually hanging out with his friend Peter that night, and he was like, they were hanging out together when he got that phone call. So Jerry and Peter went to Kathy and Russell's apartment to see what was going on. And at around 1 a.m., they decided to call the police, and Jerry was the one that called, and they reported her as missing. And following this, the police obviously came to the apartment and sussed it all out, and they said that they were going to begin searching for her. So that night, or the early hours of the morning, Jerry, Russell, and Peter stayed at the apartment just in case Sister Kathy came home while the police were obviously searching. At 4 a.m., Jerry and Peter go to leave the apartment. They obviously think, like, you know, they can't stay there all night. And when they do leave, Jerry notices Kathy's car is parked across the road, and it was parked like on a funny angle. Like the car wasn't fully in the car park. It was like kind of hanging out onto the road.
Like in a side street, sort of weird. It's so weird. It's so obvious. It's like, yes, the stupidest place if you're trying to like hide a car.
Yes. And Jerry knew that he didn't see it there when he actually arrived at the apartment at midnight. So it had appeared there in, you know, the 4 hours or so that they were waiting. Jerry then calls the police again and says, you know, hey, we found her car. And the police come and take a look. So the car was unlocked. The keys were in the ignition. And the buns that she bought from the bakery were on the passenger seat side floor, so she'd at least cashed her check and gone to the bakery. Kathy's purse was inside the car as well, but obviously no sign of Kathy. There was mud, leaves, twigs, and branches inside the car, and there was mud on the brake pedal, but not the accelerator. And this indicated to police that the driver drove with both feet. You know, like, because
so weird.
Yeah, which is very weird. And like, you know, like most people don't drive that way. Like, that's not how you get taught to drive.
Yeah, exactly.
So police began interviewing like neighbors, because she obviously lived in an apartment building. They were looking for her. They notified Kathy's family that she was missing. You know, like they were just doing the normal kind of thing. Several days later, on November the 13th, the body of a 20-year-old woman was found. And sorry, I haven't mentioned this earlier, but at this time of Kathy's disappearance, she was 27. So the body of a 20-year-old woman was found, but this was not Kathy. This was a woman by the name of Joyce Malecki. Joyce had been shot, her throat had been cut, and she was found face down in a stream by hunters in the area, and her hands were tied behind her back. And Joyce's car was also abandoned in a similar way to Kathy's, by way of, you know, it being unlocked, keys still being in it, etc. So there was some similarity between the two. you know, they were young white women, their cars were abandoned in similar ways, and Joyce had disappeared only a few days after Kathy. So the speculation began as to whether, you know, these two were connected in any way.
I think she had actually been shopping as well, from memory. Like, Joyce had gone out shopping. Like, crazy similarities there.
So there was nothing to tie Joyce and Kathy together. Like, they had no mutual friends. Like, they literally had never met, didn't know anyone. Like, it never crossed paths at all, right?
Lockie, sorry, can I just tell you one thing? Because this is something that, so, you know, police say that police are like, or like the FBI, like they didn't have any, like, contacts or no connections. But so Joyce's brothers are interviewed on The Keepers, right? And they are absolutely fuming about the comments that police have made about there being no connections, because although they may not have been directly tied together, they, like, the family, Joyce's family, her brothers, her siblings, they attended the St. Clement's Church, and the Malecki siblings also attended week-long retreats, which included religious classes by a priest from Keogh, where she worked.
Yeah.
They were, and sorry, this same particular priest, Lockie, sent a sympathy card when Joyce was found murdered to the family. So there is definitely an effing connection. But for some reason, if you do read articles and police, FBI, like, there were no connections between them, even at the time.
Yeah.
But her family have said, no, there is a connection and this is what it is. So it's something that we can talk about a bit later, but I definitely wanted to tell you about that.
Yeah, I didn't actually know that.
Yeah,
I obviously, like, because I didn't rewatch The Keepers this week. I obviously hadn't watched it for a while, but yeah, I didn't remember that.
Yeah, crazy. And so, it's on the last episode as well. Sorry, because I know I did message you a few things, but yeah, it was the very last episode. I highly recommend watching The Keepers, and I'd never seen it, Lockie. And I want to thank you for even, like, doing the case this week, because I've gotten so into it.
Yeah, it's full on.
I can't believe I never watched it. Yeah.
So on January the 3rd, 1970, two hunters came across a body in the woods, and this area of woods was about 10 miles from Kathy's house. They actually found Kathy's body, and it was, like, in a makeshift dump site, like, where people went and dropped off all their rubbish, right? Kathy was found face up with her clothing pulled down to her waist, and her purse was beside her, and everything was in it. So she had been robbed. She had a blunt force injury to her head, but there was no blood surrounding her head, so it indicated that she was killed somewhere else and then moved to the dump. An autopsy of Kathy's body indicated that her cause of death was a blow to her left temple from a blunt object. And it was determined as well that she was likely killed shortly after she disappeared based on the decomposition of her body. And there was also maggots on her face and in her mouth. Disgusting, right?
It's so bad.
A cigarette butt was also found near her body, which was taken into evidence and tested. So the police obviously began investigating, and immediately the investigation went to Jerry Coob, which is obvious. Police actually found out that the pair had been romantic. And they also found a letter that Kathy had written to Jerry about, you know, how much she loved him and how she'd wait for him and all of this stuff. And in the letter, like, it's a really weird detail, but she talks about, like, how she's just got her period. And it's like a really weird detail. It's like,
I know, back then, Lockie, this is like, what, the 60s? I just think it's, that's, like, so weird for someone to be so open about their period, especially the 60s.
She says something like, you know, I finally got my period 10 days late. That's why I'm emotional or something. So it's like, I wonder if, you know, they thought sexually... she was pregnant. Yeah. Anyway, just a weird detail.
It wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
Kathy was also found wearing a ring that Jerry had given to her. So they were like, I feel pretty serious about each other. Whether they were going to, you know, not end up not being together or not, but I feel like they were, like, in love with each other.
Love each other. Yeah, 100%. And, you know, like, he talks about how she actually called him, I think it was the night before she disappeared, and she said that she wanted to speak to him about something really important, and he assumed maybe that she had changed her mind about, yeah, but then I think later on, like, we'll discuss it after, but now he's sort of thinking maybe she was thinking something else.
Okay.
But they definitely were really close, and I honestly find him really authentic. Like, I mean, you probably haven't seen many of the interviews with him recently, but I found him believable, Lockie.
Yeah, I think that he genuinely loved her.
And he has copped, like, so much stuff online. Like, a lot of people think he's involved, that he's guilty. I don't know. There's something, and I know you're probably going to have no idea what I'm talking about, but I need to tell you this one thing. Like, we have to discuss this, right? Mm. So in The Keepers, he talks about, right, he claims that while the, like, police were questioning him and interrogating him, they threw her vagina wrapped in paper on the table, like, to shock him in front of him.
Oh, my God.
Right? And people, like, that's ridiculous. All this stuff. Like, people think he's, like, he's the craziest thing. Like, that wouldn't have happened. But I did listen to Real Crime Profile, which, honestly, I've missed them so much, Lockie. I can't wait to get back into listening to their stuff. But Jim talks about how, because this is such a wild claim, right, and it is very ridiculous, the thing is, he says that if there was evidence, it would be wrapped in paper and not in plastic, and they may have been doing that to shock him. Like, this actually could have happened. Because, like, yeah, it's that ridiculous. You wouldn't think he's telling the truth, but he actually thinks, like, both Jim and Laura say, this potentially could have happened. Like, they don't think he's lying about it. How crazy is that?
Ugh, that's just revolting.
I know.
Jerry was cleared because he had an alibi, obviously, with being with Peter. I think they, like, went to the movies and went to dinner and all that stuff. So they had the alibi, and both Peter and Jerry passed a polygraph test. So the police moved on to other suspects. I think they were always in the back of their mind. Like, they didn't, like, 100% clear him, I don't think.
No, definitely not.
They had nothing, so they were moving on. So another suspect was Billy Schmidt, and he lived in the apartment across from Kathy. He was gay, which is obviously very rare in the 60s, and he was a bit of a weird guy. Like, he was obsessed with the church and religion. Billy and his partner used to dress as a pregnant nun and a priest and walk the streets of Baltimore.
What is this?
Like, very strange.
Bad laughing.
Yeah.
What the heck?
They were very strange people. But it's like, I think they were, like, good friends, like, good neighbors. Like, I think Kathy was nice to him and he appreciated that. And lots of people say that his, like, Kathy's death, sorry, changed him. Like, he, when it happened, he began drinking a lot. He, like, became a recluse. Like, he didn't leave his apartment. Like, he was definitely affected by it. Some people say because he's responsible. Others say because he, you know,
they were close.
They were close, yeah.
But from memory, right, isn't it his, like, the guy that lived opposite, right? It was his niece again that came, like, that's come forward to, I don't know if it's to police or whatever, just to say, like, she thinks that her uncle's involved. But one of the reasons she thought he was involved, yeah, it was his behavior after, but I think it was her mum remembered him coming home with bloody clothes.
I think that's another suspect.
So two nieces have had the same recollections, but for two different uncles.
That's
it's
weird.
Really weird. So yes, yeah, so for this, and again, I'm just going off memory, but I was just jotting down dot points, and in one of my dot points it says weird, both blood, both nieces. Like, it's weird, right? And one thing in particular about this whole situation that, like, we're talking about, like, this particular guy, right, this Billy, she says that her father started to change after Kathy's death as well. So it wasn't just the neighbor, it was the neighbor's brother.
Okay.
And then, sorry, it gets even crazy, because then her brother comes forward. He's also interviewed in The Keepers. And he thinks that he was actually there
the night of her murder, like at his uncle's house, and he witnessed Billy and his friend carrying something wrapped in carpet. That he didn't see a body, but he remembers them and then dumping it, which I know you're going to get into now. So it's not just one account. This is
multiple.
Yes. It's multiple accounts. And I know you're going to get into the other niece as well, but it's just crazy that there's so many similarities with different suspects.
Yeah. And another interesting point as well is that where Kathy's body was found was literally in between the house that Billy grew up in and the local family business that he worked in. Like, it was in the middle.
Yeah, see, what the heck? Weird. Why?
Following Kathy's death, Billy attempted suicide 6 times, and on the 6th time he was successful, so he's passed away. After his death, Billy's family found a mannequin in his attic that was dressed as a nun, like in a full habit.
I actually closed my eyes when they were showing this on the keeper. Look, I was really creeped out. It was just so creepy.
Yeah.
So very strange guy. Yeah, wow.
And his family say he was strange, No one is denying how strange this guy was.
And even that, the thing for me is that their behavior changed after her murder, and it wasn't just his behavior, but it was his brother's behavior, and his brother obviously, how the heck would he know Kathy? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So another suspect was Edgar Davidson. And like you just mentioned, his niece called the police to tell them that she believed her uncle had killed Kathy. Edgar was a pretty bad guy. I don't know if you'd say that, but he was abusive to his wife. He was a pretty angry dude. On the night of Kathy's disappearance, he returned home at 9 p.m. with blood on him. And he had told his wife that he'd gotten in a fight with his boss over his paycheck. What, you're gonna what's happening here after your paycheck? You're gonna have a full fisticuff fight with your boss.
And this is the thing which some people are like, are these two guys somehow connected? Because from memory, again, that other guy that we're just talking about, Billy's brother, when he got home and he had blood on him, and his wife questioned him, why is there blood on your shirt? He said that he got into a fight at the bar or something. So there's such similar stories with two completely separate families. It just blows my mind. Blows my mind.
So Edgar's wife also remembers that a few days after Kathy's disappearance, Edgar changed all the tires on their family car. And this was really weird because they were very, very poor. At this point in time, they were really broke. So the fact that they'd used most of their money to put new tires on the car was obviously very weird. Mm. His wife also recalled that when the news of Kathy's disappearance was being broadcast on the telly and stuff like that, he would make comments like, by the time they find that girl's body, it will be winter and she will be buried under the snow. Very weird things. Edgar also gave his wife a necklace for Christmas, the following Christmas after Kathy disappeared, so only a month and a half later. And this necklace had wedding bells on it. And this is obviously weird because Kathy was going out to buy an engagement present for her sister. And wedding bells, obviously that would be an engagement gift. And his wife also said that he never, he rarely would give her jewelry as well. So weird.
And I think that the stone, this was a bell, and then the stone, again, going from memory, was green, and that wasn't her birthstone. That was I think it's the August birthstone, let's just say, right? And you find out heaps later when they do get to speak to Kathy's sister that her husband was born in August and it's his birthstone. It's the connection, that particular connection just,
weird.
Is close to home for me. And also the fact that they never found what gift, they know she went to the shops that night, but the gift was never found that she bought for her sister.
And I think as well, they knew what jewelry store she had went to or was going to. And at the time, that jewelry store didn't have any records of her purchasing anything. And that's not weird because obviously back in the 60s you don't have computers and things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
They couldn't identify where the necklace came from. You know, like there was really no leads from that.
Yeah, that everything that I saw is like that the police, and even at the start, that they did like a bit of an investigation, but they could have probably gone a little bit more harder with the investigation, or even like, you know, like questioned everyone at the shopping center, like, did she buy something from your store, just to at least narrow down what it is she bought. You know what I mean? If they know that this thing is missing with her and she's missing, like, that's just a piece of evidence that would be so critical if they did find it with someone. I don't know.
So Edgar's wife obviously turned all of this over to the police, and they separated. And following their separation, Edgar was actually arrested for another charge. And this was that he was trying to lure middle school aged girls into his car. And the school that he was trying to do this at was located behind Kathy's apartment. So very weird. Around 30 years later in the 1990s, a man called into a radio station claiming to know who had Kathy's rosary beads, which no one even knew that these were missing. But I'm pretty sure, and do not hold me to this, do nuns wear their rosary beads on them?
Oh, you're asking the wrong girl. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. So that would, I guess, make sense if that is what was happening. And Edgar's ex-wife heard this on the radio, and she was sure that it was Edgar's voice.
And he admits that it was his voice in the freaking Keepers. He admits to calling them.
Yeah. Weird.
They interview him. It's, yeah. Something about this just doesn't sit right with me. I don't know how he fits in. Yeah,
but he does somehow.
Somehow he, I feel like he fits somewhere.
So these are a few of the suspects, and this is where the story does turn a little bit. So in the 1990s, a former student at Keough, who was there in the 60s when Kathy was teaching there, came forward and accused the school's chaplain, Father Maskell, of sexual abuse.
Lockie, sorry, can I just tell you something? I'm dying to tell you this because this creeps me out. I don't know why, like, you know, about like suppressed memories and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
I find it so interesting because she originally just randomly began remembering, just like had started having like little flashes of stuff, right? After she reconnected with a school friend, like someone that went to school at Keough, and she felt weird. Like she felt weird about the school and that time in her life, but she couldn't figure out why. Like, and she couldn't even describe it. And it wasn't until one of her friends gave her like their yearbook to look through, and she saw that little pedophile's face. That stuff started coming back to her. Isn't that amazing how your memory works? That she completely, it was locked off for like 20 years.
Yeah, and that's how it happens. Like your brain is trying to protect you
by
repressing those memories. And things can be triggered, like smells or, you know, like anything can trigger the memories to come back. So she had done all of this therapy to recover all of these repressed memories of Father Maskell abusing her. And when she came out, other students started coming out as well, saying that he was doing similar things to them. And
what was 40 to 50 other girls
people.
Came forward. 40 to 50. We're not talking about two or three.
Yeah. So at the time of the abuse, this student says that she went to Kathy. I don't think she said exclusively what was going on, but Kathy asked her, is Maskell hurting you? And she said yes. And Kathy said to her, I'll take care of it.
Yeah, she said, I'll just nod your head. Because I think she was already like obviously scared, cautious. I think Kathy was a little sus. And she's like, I think she had started questioning her because of just obviously things she was saying. Like this Maskell would call girls to their office. Right. And she must have just been able to like, I don't know, tell with their behavior that something was off. And then she questioned her, but she just said, you don't need to say anything to me. Just like shake your head. Yes. And then I think she said, like, obviously she asked her whatever she asked her, and she said yes. And Kathy said, I'll take care of it.
And this was all right before she left Keough and left the convent. So the speculation here is that she had uncovered all of this abuse happening and this was the reason for her murder.
Yes.
This woman who's got all these repressed memories also began to remember that a few days before Kathy's body was found or whatever, Father Maskell took her to the woods, showed her Kathy's dead body and whispered in her ear, this is what happens when you talk bad about people.
See, and she was young and she was being abused. Like, I can't even.
So, as we mentioned, obviously, this was a repressed memory and she did go to police with this repressed memory of Maskell showing her Kathy's body. And when this woman went to take police to where this location was, this was not actually where Kathy's body was found. So police were obviously a little bit skeptical as to whether she was telling the truth.
I've got so much to say about this, but yeah.
Yeah, but I think like her body may have been moved from one area to another. Like we don't know specifically. I don't think that just because that was an incorrect detail that she's obviously not telling the truth. Like I think you go, sorry.
No, the only thing, I was going to say a few things. One, because like you said, she remembers. So originally she was Jane Doe, but you find out that her name is Jean, right? Now, Jean remembers specifically when he took her to Kathy's body, she could see maggots all over Kathy's face. And she was obviously in shock and she didn't know like what had happened. She was trying to wipe the maggots off Kathy's face.
Yeah.
And police said to her, sorry, not only have you taken us to the wrong place, but that's a false memory. As that time of the year, there wouldn't have been maggots on her face, like because of the weather, right? But when you've already said earlier, in the autopsy, it actually states that there was evidence of maggots on Kathy's body. So that already, like she wouldn't have had access to the autopsy. And that already sort of corroborates what she's saying.
Yeah, and exactly. That,
she was freaking a teenager. Imagine the stress she's under. It's not like she drove to this location. She was taken there. I can understand how this location that she's taken them to may have been the wrong location.
But I also think there's a real possibility that she was moved from one location, the woods, to another. Because I think why would Maskell take someone to where he was going to leave her and then not move her again? You know what I'm saying?
I think he was just like a cocky piece of shit. And like you said, he was in with his brother. I'm pretty sure was a police officer. He's bringing police officers over to abuse the girls as well. So he's already in on that. He's got the protection of the Catholic Church because we're going to talk. I want to tell you something later about like what you find out as in like years before all this even happened. So I think he just thinks he's untouchable.
Yeah.
He could have not even moved the body and she's just mistaken about where he's taken her. Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, who knows? But, yeah, either way, I think that her memory is legit.
Yeah, so after Jean came forward, obviously, like I mentioned, more students from Keo came forward to talk about the abuse that Maskell had done to them. So some of this abuse includes Maskell assisting in gynecological exams of the girls.
What is this?
Oh. Why is there a gynecologist at the school? Like, that's my question. Anyway.
Yeah, he would take them there. So he's like, oh, you need to see a gynecologist. So he'd take the girls to a gyno that he's obviously friends with, and Lockie, the gyno would let the priest watch him, like, I don't know, do gyno things. Like, what? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And he'd help them get undressed and he'd help them onto the thing like, oh, it's
gross.
Yeah, it's way too much. Like,
he would also tell the girls that they were receiving the Holy Spirit through his penis.
I know. Oh, my God.
Disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like you said, he would traffic them out to other members of the community. And these were other priests, other high-profile members of the community, police officers. You know, like he would bring people in to abuse them. All of these women had similar experiences, which obviously corroborates all of their accounts. And an investigation was opened and it was determined that the statute of limitations had expired and they couldn't bring any charges forward to Father Maskell.
Absolute bullshit. And I get that about, like, the statute of limitations, but, sorry, I'm just going to go off for a sec.
Mm, yeah.
There is definitely a freaking cover-up here, because even when Jean went to the police or went to the church, right, they originally were sort of supportive, but they're like, oh, listen, like, you need to get, like, someone to corroborate the story. You know, this is, like, will be slander. If you say this about him, you better get a lawyer. When Lockie, a boy, came forward, this is what I told you before, right, in like the, I think it was like mid to late 60s. So this is before any of this happened at Keogh. He was at a boys' school. He comes forward that Father Maskell was abusing him. Now, his mother went to like the head diocese or what. I'm so bad with like the actual, like, do you know what I mean? Like their titles and stuff. But she went to, like, let's say the head of the church or the head of the priests and told them. And instead of, like, actually, like, locking him up or going to the police, they moved him to a girls' school because people think that they thought, oh, he likes little boys. Let's move him to a girls' school. So that's how he ended up at Keogh. So they already have corroborating evidence by another little boy who bravely, at the time he was being abused, freaking went to his mum and told his mum, which, you know, they say it could take like 20 to 40 years for a, like, somebody abused to come forward. That's how long it could take, right? And this little boy was brave enough to tell his mum at the time. And the church freaking just moved him and have said, oh, you know, there have been no allegations about him. You're going to have to find people to corroborate it, when all along they knew.
Yeah.
And it makes me so mad, right? And another reason why this is definitely being covered up is because, right, so later on, and I don't know if it's the filmmakers, like, from The Keepers or if it's the Facebook. So there's a Facebook page started. I think it's like Justice for – I don't actually know it off by heart, but I think it was like Justice for Kathy. Anyway, and they were students of Kathy's, and they started this Facebook page. And obviously people are coming forward through there, and they're doing a lot of – they're like, you know, requesting documents and stuff like that. They're trying to just find out who killed Kathy and even Joyce now, right? Anyway, so they request all these documents from Baltimore. And they find that there are no documents on file about, like, allegations against that Father Maskell, when it's for a fact we know that in the 90s, Jean and all these other women came forward. But there's nothing on file about that this even happened. Yeah. And sorry, one last thing, I swear, right? So you know that Kathy's sister, so after Kathy disappeared, Kathy's sister received a letter, and it was in Kathy's writing, and it was from Kathy, right? The thing is, when she received it, they obviously like, oh my goodness, like, maybe this will help find her killer or whatever. So they, the family, contacted police, and they never opened this letter. I think they've only got like a photo of the outside of the letter, so we know it exists. Anyway, the police take this letter, and now there is no evidence of this letter. No one knows where it's gone. They've lost it. And Kathy's sister does not know what the heck was written in this letter, but it was posted either the day before or the day she was murdered.
So, yeah, it's very, like, that letter could have had so much stuff in it.
Yes. Mm. And nobody knows now. Like, it makes my blood boil. Like,
yeah. So all of the women, obviously, like I said, they couldn't bring charges to him. So they filed like a civil suit, and it was like for $40 million or something. And I think it was settled outside of the courts. Like the church paid all of the girls' settlements. But all of these victims do believe that Kathy was killed because she was uncovering and telling people about everything that was happening. Friends and family of Kathy's do mention, however, that she never spoke about it, never alluded to anything bad that was happening. So I think that, like, a lot of people are like, oh, well, she would at least tell Sister Russell, or I don't think
but
so.
And not only that, but I honestly think that Sister Russell knew something. They lived together. Mm. And I don't know if you know this, but the day before, again, Kathy disappeared,
another student who was being abused has revealed that she was at Kathy's house and Sister Russell's house, right? And Maskell and Magnus, this is another priest, right? And this is who started the abuse. But anyway, they barge into her apartment without, like, knocking, and they send the student and her boyfriend home, and they were fuming, right? So they've obviously busted into her apartment. This is the night before. I've got a feeling that Sister Russell knows something. Apparently she would never speak about it. She stopped. I don't think she went through with her final vows. She got married, had kids, and something crazy, right? So apparently Maskell passed away.
Yeah.
And one of the nuns called her to tell her, and she passed away 2 days later. I think she had cancer. But, like, who knows what she took with her. Yeah, and how scared. Because don't forget, like, she might have just been petrified at what she knew.
So it's obvious that the night before, Maskell was aware that Kathy knew something.
100%. I think so, 100%. And even Kathy's sister has said, she agrees that Kathy was most likely killed in relation to knowing about the abuse that was taking place. And she said, knowing my sister, she goes, you know what, when I first heard about all this stuff, I thought Kathy would have come to me. She's like, but the more I think about it, the more I think I was a lot younger than Kathy and she would have wanted to protect me. So it just makes sense. And not to mention,
all of Kathy's family were Catholic and very religious. Why would they? I don't think they would immediately think that she was telling the truth. You know what I mean? Like, I think the church has a higher power to everybody. So people that believe are not going to believe her. You know what I'm saying?
I think, I think it would be really hard. But you know how I was telling you about, remember she was dating, I've forgotten his name. Jerry. She was very close to Jerry and she had called Jerry again the night before that she disappeared. So Jerry, now looking back, he had no idea about all this abuse, right? And he said, looking back, when she said she wanted to speak to me about something important, he thought that it was about them running off to get married. But now he thinks that she was going to tell him about the abuse that was taking place. Because obviously, like you said, they spoke about her period in the freaking 60s or whenever it was. Like, she most likely was going to, that's what she wanted to tell him.
Yeah.
And he's so broken up about this. Like, my heart hurts for everyone involved, obviously. But it's just crazy.
So Father Maskell's body has been exhumed since all of this. And the reason for that was that they were going to DNA test against the cigarette butt that was found next to her body. And this was not a match. However, I don't think this matters or it's that shocking because there's that much being covered up. I think that, you know,
I don't think he would have done it himself as well.
Lockie. No, I think he would have hired someone.
Yes, exactly. Someone he had shit on or some, like a bad guy, and he would have freaking exactly got someone else to do his dirty work.
So both Kathy and Joyce, like, I know we haven't spoken about Joyce that much, but both of these murders have not been solved, nor have the police declared or admitted that they are related, which obviously we spoke earlier about their similarities and the connections. But they're still not solved and there's no real resolution at all. But I guess, Karina, what's your theory?
Well, just on that, I don't know if you know, again, I think it was like November, December, you know that they've just exhumed Joyce's body? Like literally late last year.
Yeah.
And there have not been any developments so far. So it's probably going to take freaking ages to even hear anything about it. But the only thing that makes me happy is because Joyce literally did not get an investigation. Because she was found on some sort of like government, was she found on like an army base or she was found somewhere random. So what happened is I think it automatically goes to the FBI and then the FBI realized, oh, this has got nothing to do with, you know, the government or the base. So they flicked it back to the police, but the police think because it was found there, no one investigated it. So there's not much on Joyce at all. I mean, the similarities for me are just like, is it someone wanting to make it look like it was a serial killer? Is it someone that like, I don't know, is like trying to cover up, like they think it's a way of sort of covering up
or the abuse. I definitely think it is related to the abuse, like Kathy's death for sure. I don't know about Joyce's. For some reason, I feel like it's more than likely that it's all related. I just don't know how.
So I think...
Tell me.
I think that Billy Schmidt was hired to kill Kathy.
And I'm open to that. I actually am so open to that.
I think that when they went there the night before, Maskell and Magnus...
Billy over Edna?
Yeah, I think Billy over Edgar. I think maybe Edgar was responsible for Joyce's murder. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But, yeah, I think Billy, maybe that the priests, when they were over at Kathy's apartment, that's when they thought, let's get Billy. Because, one, he was obsessed with the church. So when he would have seen the priest, he probably would have been like, oh, yeah. And then, two, he was gay, so I reckon they would have used that against him, like, this will absolve you of your sins, blah, 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 blah. And that would explain, obviously, his behaviour following the murder, his brother's behaviour. That's what I think.
See, you know, the only thing that gets me is where the heck did Edgar get that necklace from? If, like, that's a freaking, for me, that is a very weird piece of evidence.
Yeah.
A wedding bell with a random stone in it. That's not even the birth. Like, it's just weird. And even in his interviews, he's like, I don't know. Like, he's obviously very
he's
old.
Weird.
I think he's like, I don't know. Why? That's not even a birthstone. Why would I buy that? Exactly. It's weird. Like, I don't know.
So you think that Edgar could have been hired? I think it's a possibility. I think it's one of the two of them. Yeah. They were hired by the church.
See, I think if anything, but again, I think it's something to do with the church, but I feel like Billy wouldn't have called his brother. Wouldn't he have called like someone else, like church, police, like, you know what I mean? If it was a hit, why would he get his brother involved? That's what I think.
But then I think as well, like, it's your brother. You know what I mean? I think that's probably who you would ask to help you, and I think he wouldn't have been able to do it on his own.
Yeah, it's just – it is such a crazy, crazy case. And the fact that it's unsolved and this cover-up went on for so many years, it's –
Crazy, hey?
Yeah.
So if you have a case you want us to cover, you can send us a message on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is @caffeinecrimeandcanines, or you can head to our website and leave a request in the request box. If you want to support the podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review. You can head to our website to purchase some merchandise, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/caffeinecrimeandcanines.
And until next week.
Until next week.
Bye.
Bye.